Welcome to Faith and Freedom. We hope to inform, inspire, and encourage you to stand up for faith and freedom as we discuss victories and challenges in the courts, in public policy, and in the culture. Faith and Freedom is brought to you by Liberty Counsel, a litigation, education, and policy organization. Join us now as we address the latest cultural issues across America and around the world.
The IRS has agreed that churches can participate in political speech. We're going to be talking about this on Faith and Freedom. I'm Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel. Joining me is Holly Mead.
You know, this news has garnered quite a bit of media attention recently because this is a great agreement for the IRS to come out and say that churches and houses of worship are not prohibited from engaging in political speech. And of course, we've been saying this all along, you know, churches can talk about political issues because they are, in essence, biblical issues.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, the interesting thing, if you go back to the history of this amendment in 1954, then Senator Lyndon B. Johnson, he was running for United States Senate. And during the campaign, there was a nonprofit organization that opposed his candidacy. And his candidacy, by the way, was clouded with allegations of voter fraud. And now we know some of that for a fact based on individuals that have come forth and testified or made statements about what they did to fake some of the ballots. But at any rate, he was opposed by a nonprofit organization.
But it was not a church.
Wasn't a church. But once he did get elected in his fraudulent election, he goes to Congress, and he proposes this now what's called the Johnson Amendment, 1954, and it gets passed, and it's really to silence people that opposed him, and he wanted to punish them. And so this was adopted in the IRS code with no debate, and it's been in the IRS code since 1954.
And it's been a muzzle on pastors for years.
Yeah, because groups have tried to use this to threaten pastors and churches into silence. Groups like the Freedom From Religion Foundation and others, Americans United for Separation of Church and State, they have routinely sent out letters threatening churches and pastors during election cycles that they better remain silent. Now, the interesting thing, they've only threatened conservative churches.
Interesting.
They don't send these threatening letters out to the more liberal churches that would be voting or supporting Democratic candidates.
Yeah, because you had some of those like Jesse Jackson and some of those that would speak out on political issues. Did they ever get muzzled?
No, they never did. And in fact, if you look at how this has been used, it's been basically ignored by the more liberal churches, particularly a number of black churches that are more leaning Democratic. Because they've had candidates come in to their pulpit that are running for presidential election or some other high-profile election and endorse them right there in the pulpit. And they've never gotten called by the IRS to account for their actions. But if you are leaning more conservative, candidate is on the more conservative or generally the Republican side of the coin, then that's where this controversy has come up.
So I see a pattern there, yeah.
As a weapon to silence pastors. But, you know, since 1954, not one church has ever lost its tax-exempt status anyway. So IRS has always had a problem with enforcing this particular provision, but it still remains in the code, and it's still there, even with this agreement. So this came about because there was a lawsuit filed by the National Religious Broadcasters, the Intercessors for America, and two Baptist churches in Texas. And they filed this against Billy Long in his official capacity as Commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service. They challenged the Johnson Amendment that prohibits the tax-exempt organizations from participating or speaking about candidates, endorsing or opposing them. They claimed it infringes on their First Amendment free speech rights and also the Religious Freedom Restoration Act and other constitutional provisions as well. But now what the development has been is that the IRS has agreed that they will enter into an agreement that has to be approved by the court, that pastors or those speaking from the pulpit in the ordinary course of the church's activity can endorse or oppose a candidate, and that it's going to be looked at more like a private family conversation where you're sitting around the table and you're talking to your family about political issues and you indicate who you're for or who you're against. They're going to view it in that kind of a way.
You know, and I'd say kudos to the National Religious Broadcasters and Mike Ferris, who is their lead attorney, in being proactive against this, because, you know, it's come up time and time again, especially during every election. But we have been proactive about saying you can't muzzle pastors. You have to speak out. You can't use this as a muzzle. You can't be afraid. So finally, they have come forward with a lawsuit. And I think this is finally going to put this thing to bed.
Yeah. So the motion that is before the court reads, quote, when a house of worship in good faith speaks to its congregation through its customary channels of communication on matters of faith in connection with religious services, concerning electoral politics viewed through the lens of religious faith, it neither participates nor intervenes in a political campaign within the ordinary meaning of those words. To participate in a political campaign is to take part in the political campaign, and to intervene in a political campaign is to interfere with the outcome of or a course of the political campaign. Bona fide communications, it continues, internal to a house of worship, between house of worship and its congregation, in connection with religious services, do neither of those things any more than does a family discussion concerning candidates. Thus, communications from a house of worship to its congregation in connection with religious services through its usual channels of communication on matters of faith do not run afoul of the Johnson Amendment as properly interpreted. So that's a good step in the right direction, but Holly, it needs to be repealed. Mm-hmm. I mean, the bottom line is, I am glad that the IRS is admitting what it's admitting, and it will present this to a court for approval. But there's no reason to have the Johnson Amendment there. So Liberty Counsel, if you go to lc.org, we have an email where you can communicate with members of both the House and the Senate in the issue right now of a bill that's actually been proposed. It's H.R. 1919, and it is the Freedom of Speech Act that addresses this issue, and it will repeal the 1954 Johnson Amendment. In fact, the language in this bill is virtually identical to a proposed bill that I was a part of some years ago when I served on a congressional task force at the request of Senator Grassley to investigate and give reports on certain IRS provisions, including the Johnson Amendment. And so what we did was we proposed that the Johnson Amendment be repealed, that it's unconstitutional anyway, it needs to be repealed. But then we also have a balance that is provided in our language, which is in H.R. 1919. And that balance is this: now that you repeal the Johnson Amendment, and it's a wide open opportunity to endorse or oppose candidates, can someone drop $100 million into a 501c3 church or a 501c3 organization, get tax deductibility, and then that turnaround bypass the political action committees where you have campaign contribution limits, and then allow that entity to have unlimited resources to oppose or support candidates? What our proposal did was it repeals the Johnson Amendment so that any communication in the ordinary course of the church's activity, whether it's from the pulpit, the marquee, direct mail, bulletin, whatever you do that is in your ordinary course of activity, it's permissible so long as it's what you normally do. But if you are going to drop a big amount of money into a church, you can't use that church as a tax-deductible shield or 501c3 to avoid campaign contribution limits, so you wouldn't be able to do that. So on the one hand, it provides a protection for free speech by eliminating the Johnson Amendment, and on the other hand, it provides a protection against abuse where someone could actually even create a 501c3 for the purpose of getting around the campaign election contribution laws and limits. That is now before Congress. It is getting some traction. It is H.R. 1919, and that needs to permanently codify this repeal of the Johnson Amendment.
Well, you know, during his first campaign in President Trump signed, or he pledged to eliminate the Johnson Amendment. And then when he came into office, he signed an executive order in 2017 that protected religious leaders who speak out politically. But, you know, regardless, whatever happens down the line, the bottom line is you should feel free to stand before the Lord and say, I spoke out on biblical issues and I wasn't afraid about a tax exempt status.
Absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, this needs to be repealed, right. But you should not be intimidated by what God puts on your heart to say, mm-hmm. No matter whether the Johnson Amendment is there or not.
Right.
For more information, go to Liberty Counsel's website. We have a lot of information on what churches and pastors can do. LC.org, that's LC.org. Click on the Churches tab.
You've been listening to Faith and Freedom, brought to you by Liberty Counsel. We hope that we have motivated you to stand up for your faith, family, and freedom. Get informed and get involved today. Visit Liberty Counsel's website at lc.org.